Dude.
Yeah, dude.
If I told you before the season started that our leading rusher in the touchdown category is a wide receiver after 2 weeks, would you believe me?
Nope.
Yeah, would you believe me? Welcome to the Steelers by the Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host Cody. Cody, how are you this fine Monday evening?
I am fantastic. I got to work with you again today at work, which was a long day, but it was a good day. It was long.
Right. It's all right. We're hourly.
11 hours. 11 and a half, roughly.
Doing our thing.
left for work at 5:30, got back at 5:40. It is what it is.
It's all in a day's work.
Heck yeah. How are you, James?
Man, I'm good. Be a little better if it was a victory Monday.
Yeah,
that was that's not great. Yeah,
I got the morning Snapchat from my buddy Nick, and he said not Victory Monday with the sad crying face emoji.
Yeah, he's right, but sadly, we'll get into that.
Yeah,
lots of stuff going wrong.
Just going.
Could be worse in the future. We'll see.
We'll find out.
There's a lot to talk about here, man.
Yeah. First things first. Eric Ebron wound up sitting out of practice on Thursday.
Yeah.
Prior to the game, pregame news.
Yeah, hamstring injury. Might have something to do with the amount of playing time he had in the game. Seemed like maybe not as much as some of the other tight ends, but that's just a notable thing
into
the game.
That's not why. We know why. Yeah. We'll get there.
He's getting outplayed. Carlos Davis had a knee injury and did not practice both Thursday and Friday. Significant as we get into the game. Being that he was the first defensive lineman to sub in week one.
Yep.
Him not being available for week two is definitely significant. Then even more significant was these groin injuries pregame, man.
Yeah, we had so many groin injuries that happened pregame. You had two guys that went down with groin injuries. You had Joe Hayden and Devin Bush that were unable to play because of a groin injury.
And they both happened on Friday, so you really didn't get much of a chance the game plan with the guys that would have been playing in their stead, which is really the disadvantage there. You got a lot of young guys at those positions. You at least would want to play them, practice them with the first team defense all week long to give them a better chance.
And you didn't get that option.
And they didn't get that chance. So that really is a detriment to those guys as far as their game readiness going into it. Speaking of game readiness, the inactives for this week included Rashad Coward once again, Dwayne Haskins once again, and then the other three are actually injury-related with Devin Bush, Joe Hayden, and Carlos Davis.
Yep, no surprise there. They were injured before the game, kind of knew that coming in. Did play a factor for sure, I would say.
Yeah.
But now we're going to go ahead and hop into the game. First off, out of the last five meetings, Las Vegas has won four of them. And the home team has won all the last five meetings, except for obviously this one, which we'll get to that. If you didn't know, Pittsburgh was the home team. Shocker. Surprise. But again, I mean, James and I kind of discussed this last week. Pittsburgh, for whatever reason, when they play the Raiders, even when the Raiders aren't good, they don't play well.
They just don't.
And it's weird.
They're really good at laying a goose egg against the Raiders for whatever reason. And the team just got off to a slow start again, you know, and at least in the first half, I felt like the defense did a good job of keeping the Raiders' offense in check, holding them to field goals, applying pressure on the quarterback. You know, T.J. Watt had another sack and forced fumble in the game.
Yep.
But the offense just couldn't get it going, man.
No, and I thought this was going to happen again because that's just how every game goes in general, not even just against the Raiders. But I was really upset to see us just not. It's not that I don't see passion. It's that I just don't see. I don't see effort.
I don't like the game plan either, man.
No.
There's all this talk about all this misdirection and stuff we're going to see with the new Matt Canada offense, and it doesn't seem like it's there, man. Like, you're not seeing anywhere near as much motion as I thought we would, and almost no misdirection going on other than some counter runs. Which aren't working, by the way.
No, they're not working at all, and I think that's partially because the offensive line is not gelling yet, and other things are causing issues. And then I also think that has to do with just the simple fact that we haven't perfected it yet. I don't even think we've gotten good at it yet. Like, I think the misdirection is only a misdirection because you have people running in the opposite directions. I don't think we sell it yet.
Yeah.
So that's just, I mean, maybe that's just my personal opinion, but that's just what I've noticed.
Well, and I think a lot of it, too, the running game right now is being run between the tackles, and everybody knows it. So they just shoot their gaps and go into the middle, and hey, what do you know? The running back's there again. Because we're not doing any toss and sweep type stuff, you know?
No, and I don't mean to pass up talking about Ben, because we'll get to that first. But yeah, Najee Harris only had 10 carries, which I think is also a problem.
Yeah, he needs more.
We need more rushes in general, and I think Najee specifically does need more. But 10 carries for 38 yards, that's not going to win you football games. That's not going to control the clock. That's not going to do anything.
It was a baby step in the right direction. It was definitely a worse running game in the first game, minus the Claypool jet sweep for 25 yards. But again, when we're talking about the success of the run game, if we have to bring up a wide receiver, which we're going to do again this week, that's a problem. I mean, I think for the design of this Pittsburgh offense, you do want to have some successful run plays from your wide receivers, because that's the whole idea, is to keep people in their lanes and keep them from crashing through by misdirection with the wide receivers in motion. But you got to get more successful runs. At least Najee had a better average this week with 3.8 yards a carry. It's getting closer to where you want it to be. But one of those carries being a 14-yard run, that was our most successful run of this game. That was the most explosive run. And it was a good one, but when you take that out, it looks even worse, because then you're talking about 9 carries for 24 yards.
It's not
even 3 yards a carry. So you definitely need more consistency, more success, and a little less predictability on it, too. I think that's a real big problem right now. You mentioned that you're sick of them running on first down, and you're right. Everybody knows it's coming.
Every time.
So the only question is, where is it going? Because, you know, the safeties are going to cheat up, and there's just extra guys that are unblocked every time. And it's tough to ask Najee to beat 2 or 3 guys before he even gets to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, because Najee, here's the thing. We saw it this week for sure with that stiff arm. Najee can run. Those Alabama boys are built different.
Let's give this man credit for that stiff arm, right?
I'm thinking of our guy.
No, Abram.
That was Abram.
Yeah, that was their big hitter safety.
Abraham.
That just got thrown out of bounds one-handed.
I call him Abraham.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's Abram.
Yeah.
I don't know why I've always done that.
That's fine, man.
Whatever. But he got plastered.
Wow.
That was the biggest stiff arm. You said it in text to me during the game. That was the biggest stiff arm we've seen since Vance McDonald's.
Yep. Yep, which would have been the biggest stiff arm we saw since Juju in college, you know?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Very similar to that sideline one where Juju just throws the defender out of bounds one-handed.
Yep.
Same idea on how this was done with Najee. So when you're strong, you're strong. But you got to give him the opportunity. Give him some one-on-ones with defenders. He'll make it happen. I really was impressed with Najee in the receiving game this week. And it really, there isn't a lot more. We'll talk one more guy really as far as rushing, just because he got in the end zone, but he's not a running back anyway.
Yeah.
But receiving this week, Najee 5 catches for 43 yards and a touchdown. So we had a running back getting the only receiving touchdown and a wide receiver getting the only rushing touchdown.
It is what it is.
Things are a little upside down in Pittsburgh right now.
A little bit. Yeah, Juju got the end around the, I think that's what you call it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like a jet sweep.
It's a jet sweep. Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah.
One rush, 3 yards, touchdown. It was an impressive run in the sense that he broke through those 2 arm tackles. But other than that, I'm still just not impressed with the play calling.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was, and that's going to sound really bad and really skewed. Like, it was a good play call. But I think using that in that situation, yes, we scored. And if you don't do that later on in the year, in that situation, and then play fake out of that to a run to the opposite direction with Najee or a pass screen to the tight end, like, you have to do something else out of that. And I think we've only seen, you know, we've only seen the jet sweep happen when it's the jet sweep. I haven't seen any fake jet sweeps. Maybe 1 or 2.
Yeah, you're right. They're not really faking to it. They'll go through in motion.
And they'll wait till but they won't snap it until the guy's way past.
Yep. Yeah. So it's,
and maybe they're scared of a fumble.
It's ineffective in that manner. If he's already past the quarterback, the guy going in motion faking the jet sweep is a moot point. they're already over it.
Yep.
They know it's not happening. So, got to work on that timing and get that snap a little quicker so that it is an actual factor in the game. And also, like, if you're going to run it successfully with Juju and get a touchdown off of it, then the danger has to be there. You've got to be faking it to him and not, well, Juju got a touchdown, but we're going to fake it to everybody else the rest of the game.
Yep.
They need to fear that man that was successful with it.
Yep.
Like, last week, it needed to be more of them to Chase Claypool because he had one very successful. This week, it needed to be more of them to Juju because he was the one that was successful and got in the end zone.
Yep.
So they're not worried about Deontay Johnson doing it because you get one hand on him, you take him down. And Claypool, a little bit less of an agile guy, has a tougher time turning the corner or making somebody miss. But if he can get an open lane, look out, because he's so fast and strong. But this week, I think the hot hand there needed to be Juju, and it wasn't. So I think it's just a little bit of reassigning that on the jet sweeps. But as far as receiving, you know, we did see a nice performance numbers-wise from Deontay Johnson. But, man, was that an up-and-down performance effort-wise.
Yeah, the first interception, it wasn't the smartest throw. However, I think that the play could have ended totally different had Deontay Johnson continued to play through the route. Continued to play football through the whistle, continued just to play, to give effort. Yeah, he had some contact on the sideline, thought he'd get a penalty, didn't, and it led to an interception.
Yeah, you can't count on the refs throwing a flag, that's nope. For sure. And he ought to be honestly kind of embarrassed because he quit on the route, and a guy that was right next to him ends up picking the ball off. So he could have easily been there, maybe made the catch, definitely could have had a good chance of breaking it up, and he should have absolutely not been beat to that defender by Juju, who wasn't even running the route.
Nope.
Juju was the first one there trying to make the tackle, and it wasn't even thrown to him.
Nope.
Deontay should be embarrassed that that happened, honestly.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing is, it's like such a Jekyll and Hyde with him, because then the rest of the game, he really put on a pretty good show. I felt there were two times that he quit on a route, and one of them cost us the only interception Ben threw in the game.
Yeah, the only one of the season so far.
Yeah.
So, again, Deontay's getting the opportunities. He had the most targets.
More than anybody else, he
12 targets, 9 receptions. The second closest guy was Claypool with 9, only bringing in 3 of those, for 70 yards. It was phenomenal performance on Claypool's part in the sense of getting yards. I'd like to see him win some more of those point balls and attested catches and contested catches.
You couldn't be more right, man. When you're that big and that strong and that athletic,
that's why they drafted him.
You've got to win those jump balls. And I do feel like the defenders did a good job of playing through the catch point and trying to rip that ball out. They did a great job of doing it. But he's just got to overpower them.
Yep.
When you're that much bigger, you got to kind of moss some people from time to time. And he's getting like one a game, but he's getting it out of like 5 attempts, and we need that percentage to be higher than that.
I agree completely. We already talked about Najee Harris, the 5 receptions for 43 yards. Juju, 6 receptions on 7 targets. I love to see that with 41 yards total. I thought Juju played well.
He did, and again, they're just using him on these little routes. 5 yards past the line of scrimmage and everything else, he has to get on his own.
Yep.
I hope they start using him down the field a bit. Because with his ability to break tackles, if you can hit him 10, 15 yards down the field, now he's not dealing with any linebackers at all, and he's going to break them off.
They're doing a phenomenal – here's what I'm just had this, like, brain idea thing, or realization is the word I'm looking for. Pittsburgh's doing a phenomenal job of spreading the ball wide. We are not spreading the ball deep.
Yeah, not enough.
There's not enough deep routes happening. There's not enough different players going on deep routes. Like,
it's not successful enough, too, because when he is throwing it, you're getting one or two of them complete a game,
or
it's not enough.
Or pass interference.
Yeah, just not enough.
I would like to see more of them trying to... I'm just tired of seeing other teams in the NFL play deep and winning games. Like Arizona in week 1. You know, DeAndre Hopkins performed his butt off. Christian Kirk had a good game, and that's because Kyler Murray in that offense isn't afraid to send people downfield. And yeah, maybe a small part of that is because the offensive line might not be able to give him enough time to pass, you know, whatever, whatever. Ben led the league last year in how fast he was getting rid of the ball, and last I knew he was second this year. That's a great thing, that's a good thing, but at the same time, I would like him to be average in that, because all that means is you're getting rid of the ball fast.
Yeah, and then that typically means you're not going deep at all.
Nope.
That means a bunch of short routes, which eventually is going to get us to the point where it did at the end of the season last year, where everybody just stays within the first 10 yards because they know you're not going to throw it past that.
Yep.
Which is a major problem. Pat Freiermuth this game.
4 for 4. He's still 100% on the year.
Starting tight end in the game as well. On the very first drive, it was him, not Eric Ebron. Again, we did note that Ebron was coming off of a hamstring. Sometimes when that's going on, you got to limit the snaps that a guy has. But also, I want to say it was the second drive. It's third down. Eric Ebron's past the sticks. They throw it to him and he drops it.
I'm pretty sure that was the first drive.
It was the first drive.
It was the first drive because that ended in the punt.
I know it was early. Yeah. I know it was real early in the game and it was a drive killer. And Ebron just seems to be developing a habit of dropping the ball on third down and killing drives. But the exact opposite happens with Freiermuth. He was thrown at four times, caught them all.
Yep.
So it's a pretty easy conclusion as to where Pittsburgh should go in the future here.
The writing is on the wall.
Continue going with Pat Freiermuth with the majority of the catches. Ebron should be able to help stretch the field a little bit and maybe draw some safety coverage, mm-hmm. Which will get some more favorable matchups for Freiermuth. But eventually they're just not going to cover Ebron anymore because they're not going to worry about him catching it.
Yep. I mean, James Washington, same thing. You know, he was complaining about playing time. I think if the rumors were true, but one target on an important play late in the game
didn't catch,
bounced right off his hands.
Yeah,
like literally hit his hands and
which
bounced away.
Realistically, we got to be fair to James Washington. That's a rare thing for him.
Agreed.
He has very reliable hands, but he had one opportunity and he didn't take advantage of it in this game.
Yep.
And really, when you're in a close game like this was, you can't afford dropped balls. You just can't. It's like a running back fumbling the ball over and over. You can't afford it. There's a reason Mike Tomlin doesn't put up with it.
There's a reason Rashard Mendenhall was not still a Steelers player.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
That's it, man. They don't hang on to guys that fumble the ball. You get benched and you don't come off of it.
Yep. But again, I think it's important to note, I said I'm keeping track of this, and I still am. Pat Freiermuth is 6 for 6 on the year. 6 targets, 6 catches.
I mean, I know eventually it's going to happen.
Oh, it might.
But it's very impressive so far, man. Yeah.
And let me even say this. Out of all the players that were targeted or caught a ball, the two this week that were 100%, Najee Harris and Pat Freiermuth.
Man, the two rookies. And we said it last week. We expected a bigger role out of Pat Freiermuth, and we expected Ben and Najee to get on the same page, and they absolutely did. Last week, it was just a matter of Ben missing Najee by inches or a foot, like every time. This time, they were definitely on the same page, and I mean, Najee showed his abilities to make people miss and, mm-hmm. and run people over and throw them with one hand. And you got to make sure those guys get the ball. You know, those are guys that are chain movers.
Yep.
They keep drives going, and they score points for you.
You got to get the guys that can make plays in open space, get them the ball, and let them go to work.
Yeah. So next move next week is the evolution of Pat getting in the end zone, I think.
Oh, heck yeah.
I think it's Pat's turn for a touchdown.
Listen, I showed James the other day the audio from the Lions game with the Steelers, and when Pat Freiermuth scored those two touchdowns, Ben kept telling him, doesn't count yet.
Still don't count yet.
It was really funny to see.
It's a good catch, but still don't count.
Interaction between the two. But again, so let's go back to Ben now. Ben, yeah. 27 of 40, not horrible.
Not bad.
The one interception, again, not entirely his fault.
Nope.
He trusted the receiver. The receiver didn't do whatever. It wasn't the greatest throw, but it wasn't by no means his worst throw that I've seen.
No.
295 yards, 5 yards away from 300 yards, and a touchdown. Solid game from Ben.
Yeah, honestly, people are saying, oh, Steelers offense looks horrible. They can't move the ball. We almost had 300 yards passing.
Yeah.
I mean, you moved the ball.
You just didn't get in the end zone.
You just didn't finish with touchdowns. You got to finish with touchdowns in today's NFL. Two of them isn't enough, you know. So, and then when you did get the other field goal, it's a 56-yarder.
Yep.
Longest in Heinz Field history by none other than Chris Boswell. Because Boz for president. But
that's what we like to see.
He's just an incredible kicker. But yeah, we got to be able to finish more drives. And maybe a little bit more, which we're going to get into in a moment here after we talk offensive line. Mm-hmm. The defense got to give them better field position.
Because
if you're getting many yards throwing the ball and you're only getting close enough to score a touchdown twice, and when you you do kick a field goal, it's a 56-yarder. You're getting too many long fields. You're starting too deep in your own end, side of the field. So, got to see an improvement there. Offensive line this week, a little bit better out of Kendrick Green.
I think we saw about the same as to what we expected out of Dotson. Yeah. I just think Dotson's probably, in my opinion, the most solid offensive lineman we have right now.
Yeah.
We're getting consistency out of him. It's hard to say anything about Trey Turner because he got ejected. You know,
but honestly, I thought Trey was having a decent game up until
then. Oh, he was.
I think there were a lot of horror stories of him being on a decline as far as an offensive lineman, and that's not really what I'm seeing from him. He looks pretty good to me. So I think the interior is the strength of the line right now, and the tackles are just a little bit shaky, you know. Hopefully Okorafor can settle down, start getting some better games under his belt, and Dan Moore Jr., seems to be holding up fairly well. Not as good as he did in the first game this game. So we'll see how he does game three against the Bengals. I think the pass rushers there are nowhere near as accomplished as what he's been going against thus far.
Yep.
That'll help.
That'll help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think the blocking in general from the offensive line still can improve, but I don't think it was as bad as could have been.
Yeah, and I think the pass protection struggled more this week.
Yep.
Than it did the first week. So they got to get that buttoned up. But it will. I mean, these guys haven't been playing together for long.
No, not at all.
And you noticed right away when Trey Turner got ejected from the game, it was like a play or two later, the Raiders ran a stunt and the guy ran right through B.J. Finney's hole because he went looking for work and somebody came right up his hole where he was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So they'll get that buttoned up, I do believe. We got a good offensive line coach and Coach Clem and he'll get them all on the same page. Now, on the defensive side,
I think it's important. I want to start in a weird spot. Normally, we go defensive line. I want to start in a weird spot.
All right.
I think it's important to note that when we signed or traded for Joe Schobert, James and I were both kind of, you know, wow. They gave it to us for a fifth-round pick.
Yeah, so that means they didn't value him very highly.
No, and you know, even the Browns getting rid of him means they didn't. I mean, if you want to keep somebody that's good, you keep him, whatever.
Yeah, but they didn't pay him. They let him go.
Correct. So the whole point of this is Browns didn't think he was worth keeping, and the Jaguars thought he was only worth a fifth-round pick, and they were happy with getting a fifth-round pick. So I was worried from the get-go about him, and then I think this game was what kind of solidified it for me. We talked last week how we didn't see much of him, but maybe that meant he was doing like what he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
This week was kind of the opposite.
Yeah, and to be fair to him, in the first quarter, he played very well. He had a nice pass breakup. I thought Joe Schobert was having a good game. Then he just started getting picked on, man, and he struggled mightily. He was mostly where he needed to be, but the ball going right over his shoulder, giving up a touchdown at the end of the game that really made the game out of reach, and just over and over. As the success of Darren Waller grew at the end of the game, which honestly Pittsburgh held him in check until about the fourth quarter, it was against Joe Schobert that he found his success. It was in that matchup that it just looks like Schobert is just not athletic enough to cover guys like that, which that's the new age of tight end.
Yep. And
the new age of tight end is not the big 265-pound blocker. It's the 245 to 250-pound receiving tight end. That's a more athletic guy. So it makes you wonder how long is that going to be our answer. Hopefully Devin Bush can come back from his injury next week. But staying on the inside linebacker position, I was really impressed with the play from Robert Spillane.
Yep, and that's where I was going to go next. Robert Spillane came in technically off the bench for this game, but he started. He came off the bench in the sense of he wasn't supposed to start.
Nope.
And he led the team in tackles.
And the kid was everywhere. He was just taking people's heads off with his hits, man. That one tackle for loss that he scored, he found the seam, blitzed through the gap, and hit the running back like 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Yep.
Even the one play where he got flagged for unnecessary roughness was bullcrap.
Yeah, his helmet never even made contact with the other guy's helmet.
Nope.
He led with his shoulder. He hit with his shoulder. And not even the slightest little tink of the helmet happened.
Nope.
Didn't even happen.
But he played very well.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic game from him. He was not a casualty at any point in time.
Nope.
which he was targeted a lot in the preseason as far as in the passing game. But 10 tackles for a guy that we were worried about so much that we went out and got Joe Schobert. It now makes you wonder, would we have been better off just hanging on with Robert Spillane and letting him start next to Devin Bush?
I think so. Personally, I do. And maybe that'll change if Joe Schobert gets better used to the system or whatever. But so far, Joe Schobert has not impressed me. Joe Schobert has not made me excited for Joe Schobert to be on the team. Joe Schobert needs to do something to make Joe Schobert look better. Because right now, Joe Schobert looked like Joe Schmo. Okay? I want to see something better. That was my little rant. That's all I have to say. I just want to see more out of him, for sure.
Yeah. So let's stay with linebackers. Go to outside linebackers.
Okay.
Right out of the gate, TJ Watt had an incredible start to the game with a sack and a forced fumble. Kind of sounds familiar, right? A
little bit.
Then unfortunately tweaked a groin, was unable to return to the game.
Very frustrated with that. You could see that he was very frustrated.
Yeah, he was pissed that he was injured.
I saw some guy comment on the frickin' one of the Steelers groups page that I'm in on Facebook, and he said he has his money, he don't care.
Oh,
and
stop.
I'm like, you clearly have no, like, shut up, make a dumb comment from your couch again. You clearly have no idea about this man's integrity or his his drive, his passion. Oh, that was frustrating.
That's just a moron making a comment right there. That's all that is. TJ is speculated to possibly be ready for the Bengals game. Although, realistically, we're not really going to know until late in the week.
No.
Probably about Friday or so, we'll see if he's able to participate in practice. If he is, that's a good sign. We do have to make note that that is what Alex Highsmith was coming off of before the very first week. He had a groin injury and has not been able to get home yet as far as sack. So did get a tackle for loss this week. But it seems like he's just not finishing to get to the quarterback. If he's got a groin nagging him too, that would make sense as to why. Because it's really tough to turn a corner with those extreme angles with
and
somebody pushing
it
on
you.
You
saw
too.
It in TJ when you saw the play that he came off the field. You saw that he couldn't turn. He was very frustrated with himself and with that. But also, outside linebacker, speaking of people getting home or not getting home, Melvin Ingram.
Yeah, man, there it is. That's exactly why you pay that man $4 million.
Yep.
He looks like a varsity player, just like Tomlin always says. This guy's varsity. Well, Melvin Ingram's varsity. So if you have him playing a significant amount of snaps, you can expect him to get a significant amount of sacks. In my opinion, with his current role, wouldn't be surprised if he ends up with 6 sacks by the end of the year, 6 or 7.
You're telling me that snaps, not even snaps equal sacks?
For a guy like that, hell yeah, it does. Not for everybody.
That's fair. That's fair.
For some people, snaps equals snaps, like Tyson Alualu.
Ooh. Oh. You hit my heart spot.
Yeah.
That one hurt.
Yeah. Unfortunately, got rolled up on in this game and broke his ankle.
So we're going defensive line.
Yeah.
Very sad. Tyson Alualu, again, somebody who just this offseason had intentions on signing with the Jaguars as an unrestricted free agent. And just COVID like that, COVID hit. He got sentimental about his daughter's finishing, or I think it's one.
Yeah, his kids didn't want to leave Pittsburgh. They just purchased their dream home there. Yeah.
And he made the decision to stay in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
As a 33 or 34-year-old, made the decision to stay and
more
than likely finish out his career here. Now he might have just finished out his career.
Yeah. That
debatably.
Unfortunately, that might end up being his last game. We'll find out. I hope not, being that it's a broken ankle. There's no reports at this point of there being any ligament damage, which is excellent. If he was able to get away from this injury with no ligament damage, there is a chance he could come back by late in the season or maybe early in the playoffs if Pittsburgh is able to make a playoff run.
Yep.
If this were ligament damage, you can basically chalk it up the season over no matter what. So we may have been fortunate there. My understanding is that he's already undergone surgery to repair it, which I think probably means it was a compound fracture, which is just gross. I'm glad I didn't see that part.
Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah.
Coming from someone who studied sports medicine, it's gross. It's gross. I've seen enough of them in my lifetime.
You don't want to see that nonsense. What you do love seeing, though, is Cam Hayward.
Cam Hayward, seven total tackles. I wish he had 7 sacks. four solos, 3 assists. He had 1 tackle for loss. And he had one pass defended as well.
Yep. Just the line. Seems like every week he's getting his hand on the ball. I think, honestly, he's going to have no choice but to really turn it on now with being down Stephon Tuitt and Tyson Alualu.
It's all him now. Yeah. And I'm hoping that someone else can step up, like Isaiah Loudermilk or Chris Wormley.
Or Bugs.
Or
Henry Bondo!
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we will.
He's excited. He's ready to talk about it now. But we're not going to go there.
It was literally the only good thing that came with Tyson Alualu breaking his leg. The only good thing.
I don't know. That's a hard stretch. Anyways.
I'm not saying it's a good thing that happened.
Yeah.
It's the only good thing that happened.
I get it. But again, Cam Hayward does need to take it to the next level to just get some pressure and allow other guys to get in there as well. You saw Chris Wormley come in, only have one tackle, didn't see him a whole lot. You also saw Isaiah Loudermilk come in, had an assisted tackle. I'm not seeing the type of penetration that I would like to see from Loudermilk, especially at his size and he's even debatably strength. I know that he's not the strongest guy in the locker room, but he's big enough that I would expect him to be pushing some guys around.
I felt like his, I don't want to say effort, but his push on the pocket was much greater in the preseason than it was in this game. This was his NFL debut. He is going against starting offensive linemen now, so that definitely factors into things. But you want to see a little bit more there. They've got to get more pass rush, more penetration, and more run stopping out of another defensive lineman. It can't be just Cam. There's got to be somebody. Yeah, I mean, you look at it, Wormley with one tackle, Isaiah Loudermilk with one assist. And where are we looking at it with Isaiah Bugs? Oh, nothing. Didn't register a single thing. And Carlos Davis wasn't even healthy enough to play. So we got to get more contribution. We can't have Cam getting seven tackles and one tackle and one assist out of all the other defensive linemen combined.
Yeah, it's not
absolutely
ideal.
Have to have more.
Not ideal.
They're just going to run at the other guy every play. They're going to look at where Cam's lined up, in audible left or right, wherever the other guy is, and just run all over us. Got to have more there.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of more, I know we talked about, obviously, Cam Hayward with the batted down pass. We got Joe Schobert also with a batted down pass. And you got Chris Wormley with a batted down pass. No corners, no safeties with a pass defense in this game.
Yeah, man, I got to be honest with you. As much as I was excited about the secondary after game one, I'm as nervous about him now after game two.
I might be more nervous than I was excited.
It's incredible how much of a difference he had. And their only change personnel-wise really was Joe Hayden down, Akilah Witherspoon up. Witherspoon's most notorious play of the game was getting smoked. Absolutely smoked. But this is, again, Henry Ruggs, who ran like a 4.27 40 or something. Unfortunately, on the play, Minka had responsibility of being the deep guy in covering Darren Waller, who had a linebacker on him, but his responsibility was to make sure Waller didn't beat him over the top. He took that one false step, and that's all it takes for a guy like Ruggs to get behind you.
Yep.
So he was unable to recover and get there in time. One thing that really confused me is it seemed like all of a sudden Cam Sutton was struggling tackling, and that seemed to be a strong suit previously, as an excellent tackler, and this week he just couldn't bring anybody to the ground. You could see how pissed he was at himself.
Oh my gosh.
Every single time he was very, very upset with himself for not getting guys to the ground, but that doesn't change the fact that he wasn't getting guys to the ground.
And man, I think next week is going to be different for Cam Sutton, and here's why I'm saying this. I am speaking something
into existence?
No, not exactly. I'm speaking something as fact that I have literally zero clue about. But I'm just assuming maybe Cam Sutton is dealing with something off the field. Well, he was distracted. He could have been whatever. The difference of play from last week to this week doesn't make enough sense to me, and I am blaming it on off-field issues.
I think, honestly, he just felt a lot of pressure. I think he felt pressure of all of a sudden going from the number four corner to the number two corner, and then in 1 week, he's the number one. So the whole defense is leaning on him to get these stops, and I think it's kind of like a kicker getting the yips. You miss one tackle, and it starts to compound itself, and next thing you know, you've missed three or four tackles in a game, and you're wondering if you can even tackle anybody anymore.
Ed Reed knows about that.
Yeah.
Or not Ed Reed. Excuse me, Jeff Reed.
Jeff Reed, yeah.
Ed Reed doesn't know about that.
Jeff Reed knows about the yips. Jeff Reed definitely knows about it. But yeah, I feel like I'm not losing faith in Cam Sutton, don't get me wrong. I feel like Cam is a very good corner. He's just young and developing.
Yep.
And not having Joe Hayden out there was very noticeable, unfortunately.
Very unfortunate.
Which is bad because it's the last year of his deal.
Yep.
So they got to get this figured out. I mean, obviously, you can address it in free agency. You can address it in the NFL draft next year. But somebody's got to figure it out and step up.
Yeah, James Pierre led the cornerback room in tackles. Granted, he also played a lot of special teams.
He did,
but
yeah.
But he had six tackles.
And at the very near the end of the game, not at the very end of the game, but near the end, Pierre almost had an interception. He jumped in front of a route, just barely missed it, and I do believe it was incomplete on the play. They're not giving him credit for a breakup,
nope.
So he must not have got his hands on it somehow. But that, I felt, might have been the best play by anybody in the secondary in the entire game, which is bad when you
don't. I don't agree with that.
Okay, go ahead.
I can't yet. That's safeties.
Hmm?
I can't go there yet. We're talking about corners yet.
We'll get there. Go to safeties.
Well,
because hopefully we're calling Trey Norwood
again
a corner because he was awful in this game.
Trey Norwood was horrible. even Justin Lane, both of them only had one tackle together.
Justin missed some tackles too.
It was bad. But Minka had an okay game. Six tackles.
Yeah.
That's about it. Whatever. Terrell Edmonds. I still wish he did more things. I'm still not satisfied with him as a player.
Yeah.
But leading the, minus James Pierre, who also played special teams, Terrell Edmonds led the secondary in tackles with six, five solos, one assisted. He also had two tackles for a loss, one coming on a very impressive blitz where he came right through the line of scrimmage, and he looked like he, for a brief moment, I thought I was like Watt, and this was when T.J. Watt was no longer playing. I thought I was watching T.J. Watt take over Terrell Edmonds' body. It like Terrell Edmonds or T.J. Watt is so good about coming around the edge and meeting the running back wherever he is up against the line. And Terrell Edmonds did that. And I meant to text you about it, but then I kind of didn't want to. And I was shook because I haven't seen that from Terrell Edmonds ever.
Yeah.
But that to me was the best play in the secondary. Granted, it was also at the line of scrimmage, but whatever.
I'll give you that, though. You know, it, just because it wasn't a pass breakup or an interception or fumble, doesn't mean it wasn't a good play. So it's nice to see Terrell Edmonds taking some steps forward. Just unfortunately, when you give up almost 400 yards passing, it's tough to say a lot of good about the secondary at that point. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Carr was 28 of 37 for 382 and two touchdowns. Again,
that's a hell of a performance.
Amazing performance, but just the lack of performance in our secondary.
That's it. You got to get some stops.
And it's not like this is a team that snuck up on us. Everyone knows where the Raiders are projecting right now, and they're projecting upward. They're becoming a better team. We all know about Darren Waller. We all know how fast Henry Ruggs is. And both those guys, in their own moments and in their own respectives, torched us.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I would say Pittsburgh did a lot better against Waller than I thought they were going to.
Well, that was also because they didn't target him as much as I expected.
Yeah,
them to.
But that's where we saw the other tight ends actually get involved.
Yep.
Including the kid from LSU.
The guy that you talked about.
Yeah. So that was interesting to see. He went from being somebody that, you know, Pittsburgh had some interest in, Foster Moreau, this is who we're talking about right now, to being a significant contributor in their receiving game. So it shows how important it is to have two good receiving options at the tight end position. Seems like Pittsburgh has one right now. We were hoping that Ebron would be a second one, and he's not really being what we were hoping for.
Not at all.
But, you know, hey, a little bit better performance maybe out of our special teams this week at least.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely got to see, I think, both of our kicker and punter had one of their better games. I mean, Boswell doesn't really have a bad game, but that's beside the point.
No.
For one on field goal. Again, the longest field goal now ever kicked in Heinz Field.
56 yards. He would have had it from 57.
Oh, he would have possibly had it bouncing off the upright of 58.
58 would have been real close.
And then two for two on extra points as well.
Kick, man.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's... He never ceases to amaze me. Boswell is such a good kicker. And Presley Harvin, from any difficulties had in the first game, bounced back completely with a 49.3-yard average. Very nice.
Three inside the 20.
Yeah, three inside the 20.
And
very
one
good.
Was very far. I don't know where they downed it at, but the one was very, very well kicked. I think they got it at the 3-yard line. So it was a very good kick on his part, and a very good, you know, the defense, the cover team got down there and
played coverage it well. Team did a nice job. You're absolutely right there.
Raymond McLeod, 4 returns for kickoffs, 23 average, nothing crazy. Punt returns 2. Again, nothing crazy from Ray Ray yet.
Good average.
I wish we had Matthew Sexton here to be able to compare. I do. I really do.
You never know, man, if this Deontay Johnson knee injury turns out something where he misses a little time.
You think they bring him up before Cody White?
Well, he's not on the practice squad, I don't think.
That's fair.
Yeah, but I don't know where they'll have to do something.
We'll have to find out. We'll have to find out where he's at. But again, an okay game all around from Pittsburgh. I wasn't impressed really by anything. Other than, again, I think the highlight of this game was our rookies. 5 for 5 for Najee and a touchdown, and 4 for 4 for Pat Freiermuth.
And I'd say another highlight would have been the performance of Robert Spillane. Really nice to see him get some confidence back, go out there and play with full aggression, full tort, and really hit some people.
I like it. Now, after the game, we had some things happen. Obviously, we talked about TJ Watt's groin injury. We're still waiting to hear back. Well, we don't know the extent of everything yet. We're there expecting him to be back, but it just depends if he's going to come back for the Bengals game.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, as we mentioned, the Tyson Alualu ankle injury turned out to be a fracture. He had a bad suspicion when you saw the air cast go on his leg.
Yep.
Typically, the air cast doesn't go on unless it's a really bad injury. This falls into that category, unfortunately. So, like we said, being a broken bone, there's an actual chance he'll come back same season. Ligament damage, forget about it. It's not happening. But broken bone, maybe. Pittsburgh today placed him on the injured reserve, as was expected with that kind of news.
And
called up from the practice squad, my boy Henry Mondo.
He's been waiting to say that all day, guys.
I've been saying it a lot during the day. Just this is the first time on the pod.
That's true. That's true. He has. The entire truck ride today. Mondo this, Mondo that. Mondo not.
Okay, listen. It wasn't until the afternoon it happened.
That's fair. That's fair. Deontay Johnson's knee injury, we're still kind of waiting to hear back on how extensive that is, as well as the Isaiah Bugs ankle injury. So those injuries are unknown as far as how severe they are, if they're going to be able to play next week. And all those things.
And also, I would say keep a close eye on it this week. We will be for sure. We'll share anything that we see on the Facebook page as we try to do for you folks. If Carlos Davis and Isaiah Bugs aren't ready to go, they're going to bring somebody else in.
It's very true.
I want to say there's another defensive lineman on the practice squad that was not on the team previously. We mentioned it when he was signed originally. He was a good, 6'6", 6'7", 305, something like that. I'll look for a guy like that to possibly be a game day promotion, because you're not going to go into it with only 4 healthy bodies. They went
you
into
can't.
It this
you literally
week.
Can't.
Yeah, they did it this week with 5 and found out how quickly that can go haywire when a couple guys go down, losing both Bugs and Alualu in the game. They only had 3 healthy defensive linemen by the end of the game.
Yep.
So.
Yep, we'll definitely keep you guys up in the loop on that. Keep an eye on our Twitter page and Facebook as well. Now it is time to look forward to the Bengals.
Yeah, and before we go there, honestly, I just kind of want to give a shout-out. There's been a lot of new followers on our Facebook page. We don't get the notifications anymore when new people follow, but
we don't
checked
know why.
On the number.
We don't know why.
It's a Facebook thing, man. Facebook is dumb sometimes.
Sometimes.
But anyway, regardless, the number has grown pretty significantly in the last month, and really appreciate every single one of you that has joined our Facebook family.
Absolutely.
Feel free to like and share the podcast episodes.
We will give you a shout out for those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts.
That's right.
As James would always say.
Dang right, man.
All
right.
Now time to look to the Bengals.
Yes.
We're going to go through this pretty quickly. And then at the end of this, James and I both will have our top 3 keys to success against the Bengals. Overall, not specifically offensively or defensively. Quarterback, Joe Burrow.
Tearing
not
some
much
people
to
up.
Say. Not much to say about him.
He's a pretty good quarterback, man.
He's doing phenomenal, especially coming off the injury that he had. He doesn't look scared in the pocket. He doesn't look nervous. Very confident young man, and impressed.
Might be scared of bears, but otherwise he's looking good.
You have a point.
Joe Mixon, a heck of a running back, so never underestimate a guy like that. Very explosive, quick.
Injury prone a little bit, but definitely keep an eye on him. The thing that I'm excited to see is actually their third string running back, Chris Evans. rookie this year. I don't expect him to get any playing time, but if he does, I'm just curious to see how he plays. Because I remember seeing him in mock drafts and just be very curious on his play style and stuff like that. Wide receivers, obviously led by T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, and Tyler Boyd. All of those guys can be instant game changers if you get them the ball in open field.
Yeah, and Tyler Boyd's been a real problem for Pittsburgh in coverage in previous years. So they got to make sure they have a good plan for covering him up this year, whether you put Cam Sutton on him or what. You got to make sure there's a good plan in place there. CJ Uzomah, their tight end, a little more of a receiving tight end, right?
Listen, every time I see that name in a Bengals uniform, yeah, all I can think of is TJ Husmanzada.
That's fair, man.
I can think of.
TJ, who's your daddy?
But yeah, great tight end. Even Drew Sample, the backup, isn't a bad tight end by any means. I think he probably has more catches this year than freaking Eric Ebron. So
yeah, probably.
It is what it is.
Offensive line is improved from previous years, mm-hmm, with a nice influx of some youth there. Jonah Williams, the left tackle, was a first-round pick a couple years ago. Quentin Spain at left guard. Trey Hopkins at center. Xavier Suafilo at right guard. That's right. I know the pronunciation on that one.
Hey.
And then your right tackle, Riley Reiff, who's been around for a number of years now and has some good resume there. So.
Yeah, Riley Reiff probably being the oldest guy on that team or on that offensive line at 32 years old. Been in the league for 10 years. Big boy, 6'5", 313. So I'm excited to see hopefully some pressure get applied here. I would love to see TJ Watt be able to play this game.
Yeah, and again, I think there's an opportunity on the interior offensive line here.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say the strength here is going to be at the offensive tackle position. So we gotta get somebody helping out Cam. If he's getting triple teamed on the inside, he's not gonna get the pressure that we need. So somebody else has to win some one-on-ones inside.
Absolutely. Going to the defensive line specifically, you have DJ Reader at the nose tackle, Larry Ogunjobi at the defensive tackle. That's right, I knew that pronunciation.
You better he played for the Browns for like 6 years.
I know, I still hate it.
Yeah, because he was a problem for us.
I know. Sam Hubbard at the left defensive end position, and Trey Hendrickson at the right defensive end position.
So some pass rushers with some success experience, even including Larry Ogunjobi. So look for three of those guys to apply some pressure. Pittsburgh's going to need to be on their P's and Q's, or these outside linebacker defensive end types are going to get some pressure.
Yep, linebackers, they only have two listed as starters in the sense of their scheme and how they run their offense. They typically run four down linemen with two linebackers, and then they're mostly in the nickel with that third corner. You got Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt as the two starting linebackers. Logan Wilson definitely being the better of the two. And then they also have the rookie.
Definitely better.
Is he a rookie? Akeem Davis Gaither?
He's young. I don't remember. I want to say he might be a rookie.
He might be. He might be 2 years pro. Excuse me. He's definitely young. I knew he was young. Quick. He is quick.
Yeah.
So look forward to if he comes in and subs, maybe some extra pass rush or ability to guard somebody better than maybe some of those other guys. Corner is where it gets interesting for me.
Yeah. Now, this nickel corner, maybe you heard of him before, Mike Hilton. Yeah. So this is a matchup that's going to be extremely important. Juju Smith-Schuster versus Mike Hilton. Mike Hilton is very good against the run and very good blitzing the quarterback. Not always the greatest in coverage.
I hope he doesn't get a sack.
We need to expose that.
Very much so.
Dude, I want to see him blitz against
Najee and get wrecked.
Najee will wreck him. Najee will freaking powerbomb him. Just pick him up and slam him on his head, dude.
It'll be good to
see. It'll be fantastic. Now, the other corners, Shadobi Awuzie and Trey Waynes. Not bad corners.
Not bad corners at all. I think this, and I might be disrespecting the Bills a little bit.
Go ahead.
I think this is the best overall cornerback room we've faced so far. You know, they had Trey White.
I see what you mean. Trey White's top heavy, and yep, then the other two not as good. All three of these guys are pretty solid.
Yeah.
And I would say Jesse Bates, the safety, is going to be the best safety we've gone against so far this
100%.
Year, too. 100%. So look for Ben to be avoiding him, hopefully, because he'll get picked off if he goes out.
And that's not to say that the other safety is nobody. Von Bell is also a very good safety.
Yeah, that's a good hitter.
Your Abraham.
That's why I said it. I'm hoping he gets stiff-armed.
I'd like it. I'd like it a lot. And then obviously you got your special teams guy, Evan McPherson, as the kicker. Punters, Kevin Huber. Long snapper, because it matters, is Clark Harris.
They're people too, bro.
And then you also have kick return with Brandon Wilson and punt return with Darius Phillips, who's a backup corner. Tyler Boyd is the backup kick punt returner as well. So be looking forward to this game this upcoming week. First divisional game.
That's it, man. Very important game. As everyone in the division is 1-1 right now, you need to have those wins in the division. So got to figure out a way to beat these Bengals. And we've got some keys as to how we think Pittsburgh would be able to do so.
We do. Would you like to share first or me?
Doesn't matter to me, man.
All right, go ahead. My three keys to success against the Bengals are, one, control the tempo. All
right.
I want to see us, and this includes every aspect of offense and even some of defense. I want to see us be able to run the ball better and control the clock. I don't want to see us punting after 5 to 6 plays like we have been. I think literally on multiple downs, I think 3 drives specifically were 6 plays or less. You can't have that.
Got to have more. You're right.
You have to have more. And then moving forward from that, I think we need to get to the quarterback. I'm not saying we need sacks. Mm-hmm. Sacks would be nice, but we need to, again, just like in week one with Josh Allen, we need to have somebody up there or multiple guys up there in QB pressures. And then the last thing is we need to win the turnover battle. This is a game against the Raiders that we didn't do it. It was only 1-0. You know, it was one interception to no turnovers. We almost had a fumble recovery when TJ Watt had the sack fumble, but we need to win that turnover battle.
Boy, this is going to be boring because mine are basically the same here. Are they really? My first one is establish the run game.
Okay, fair enough.
We've had a real problem so far in the first 2 weeks establishing the run. Got to have some success doing so. This defensive front is a little bit more pass rush heavy than it is run stopping heavy. So Pittsburgh's got an opportunity here. If they can't establish the run against a team like the Bengals, I don't know who they're going to establish it against. My second point was win the turnover battle. So same as you said there. Typically, if you win the turnover battle, you'll win the game. We need to see some splash plays on the defense. Somebody needs an interception. We need some forced fumbles. I would love to see an interception from that secondary. I want to see these guys get involved. Minka get a pick. Joe Hayden get a pick. Somebody show me something. If Joe Hayden's healthy enough to play this game, this is the kind of game where he baits a quarterback, jumps off his guy, and goes picks the ball off. So I could see that happening. Got to win the turnover battle.
Pittsburgh does love rookie quarterbacks, and he's basically still a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, he didn't get to play a lot last year.
Nope.
And then my third point is that we need some interior defensive line pass rush other than Cam Hayward. Cam's going to give us pass rush. He always does. Whether he gets the sack or not, he gets to the quarterback a lot every week. We've got to have some contributions from the guy standing next to him because they play nickel a lot. There's usually only 2 defensive linemen in there, Cam and who? If it's Chris Wormley, he's got to start getting some pressure. If it's Carlos Davis coming back from his knee, he's got to get some pressure. If it's Loudermilk playing, man, play your heart out and go get the quarterback. And if it's Mondo, I know he's going to play his heart out. So we've got to see it from somebody, and it's okay if it comes from multiple people and not just one of them. But there's got to be somebody but Cam. Somebody in addition to Cam doing
it. Gotta be. Yeah, I think it's funny that we have the same
viewpoints. It's pretty similar, man.
Same viewpoints.
Very similar.
And I'm gonna surprise you with something, James, a little bit. What's that? And you can roll with it. You can roll with it.
Or not.
No, you can roll with it. You can roll with it.
I don't know what he's going
to
say here.
I'm going to be posting a new post to our Steelers by the Lake Instagram page. I'm going to be sharing one of our TikToks on there with you guys because I think it's hilarious. All
right.
And what I want is, I want to know someone else's three keys to success for next week. For next week. So
not for the Bengals game.
Not for the Bengals, for the Packers.
For the Packers.
I want because we just had the three. We didn't talk about this beforehand. Yeah. We had the same almost three identical keys to success. I want to hear someone else's. I want to hear one of our listeners' keys to success.
All right.
That being said.
I'm going to call out a couple people right now.
With that being said, I don't want them to post about it.
Yeah.
I want them to.
To comment.
To like the post.
Yeah.
Comment and tag their friends who are Steelers fans or whatever who aren't.
I like it.
And. I mean, sometime this week, maybe by Wednesday or Thursday, we can define that later on. I'm gonna pick a winner, and we're gonna hop on a Zoom call with them and get their audio for next week's podcast. And I want their three takeaways. So if you want to win a chance to be on the podcast with James and I, like and tag your friends.
Listen, I know there's a few of you that would be really good at this opportunity. Josh, you've been a super fan lately. Give us a contribution. Nick Pretzel, I know you're listening. Maybe he's even probably in the hallway. I'd love to hear your input on it. There's a few of you. I mean, there's states we get consistent downloads every single month. From Florida, from Texas, from Washington, from Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Carolina, Maryland, West Virginia. You guys are listening every single episode because we see the downloads in several other states. If I didn't list you, I'm sorry. There's a lot of other states that are listening every single episode. Let's hear from some of you.
I want you guys on the podcast. Let's go. That's what I'm talking about. This will be our first official
fan
guest interaction, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, let's go.
So again, on the Instagram page, like the Instagram post that I'm about to post. You'll see it. It's a TikTok. And then comment and tag at least two friends in the comment. And then say, hey, check these guys out, blah, 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 whatever. We are excited to hear from you guys. We look forward to it. Again, we can't thank you guys enough for listening. Be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok @ Steelers by the Lake. And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.